It was only the middle of the morning, so McElvey's Palace Saloon wasn't busy. A chubby gent with slicked down black hair and a narrow mustache was working behind the bar. A drunk was sprawled face down on one of the tables. He was the only customer.
Give me a bottle and six glasses.
A little early in the day for whiskey.
It's already been a long day, Ty.
You're right. Pour me one.
What are we gonna do, Al?
I can tell you what we're not gonna do. We're not gonna let Dugan and the rest of those big ranchers buffalo us. We got us a right to be here, and by God, we're through being pushed around.
We can't stop them from stringing barbed wire. And as long as we're fenced in like we are, there's not much we can do.
We can cut those damn fences! That's what we should have been doing all along. Every time we come across a fence, cut every blasted strand of it. At every post for 100 yards or more.
That won't do any good. They'll just put up more. And if any of their men catch us at it, they'll be shooting, just like last night.
Whose side are you on anyway?
I just don't want to see anybody else get killed.
As long as it's Dugan or one of those other bastards like him, I don't care how many of them get killed.
We've tried cutting fences. From what I've heard, fences have been cut every now and then for the past couple of years. And like Vern said, it hasn't done a bit of good. Maybe we could come to some sort of arrangement with the big ranchers instead.
Arrangement? What kind of arrangement could we have with those greedy bastards?
They understand money. We could pay them a fee to drive our cattle across their spreads when it's time to take them to market. Same thing for water rights, where we're fenced off from the creeks and such.
You're just a grubline rider. You mighty free and easy about spending other people's money, Ty. You don't have anything riding on this. We do.
Al's right. Our profits have been cut to the bone. There's no money to pay fees to men who don't really need the cash.
That'd bust us.
Well, I'm not sure we can fight them. Did you see that stranger with Dugan? Do you know who he is? He looked like a gunfighter to me.
Yeah, he is a gunfighter. His name's Frank Morgan. I ran into him in here last night. I told him what was what.
And you got a bullet through your arm for your trouble. Morgan could have killed you just as easily.
Frank Morgan? The one they call a drifter?
That's him.
So, they all knew what Beaumont knew. The drifter was here in Brownwood. But what the hell was Frank Morgan doing with Dugan? Was he really the cattle baron's hired gun? That wasn't like the Morgan that Beaumont had known. But times changed, and so did the men who lived through them. Maybe he had finally become what so many people had always taken him to be. A ruthless, cold-blooded killer.
He's supposed to be one of the fastest guns still alive. Faster than Smoke Jensen, even.
Well, if you're scared of him, you can just pull up stakes and ride on any time you're of a mind to. I ain't afraid of him.
Maybe you should be. He might kill you next time.
I'll be ready for him next time. Morgan won't kill me unless he shoots me in the back, like the low-down skunk he is.
Frank Morgan may be a lot of things, but he's not a skunk, Al. He wouldn't shoot anybody in the back.
Well, if you think so highly of him, why the hell don't you marry him?
I don't plan on ever getting married again. I already buried one husband, and that was enough. Morgan's a handsome man, though, in his way.
Don't go soft on him, Callie. He works for Dugan, remember? We may wind up swapping lead with him.
If you do, Beaumont thought, you'll probably wind up dying, too.
Good morning, Callie. Boys, I heard about what happened to Chris Kane. I'm mighty sorry about that. He seemed like a decent sort, if I might, hot-headed.
He's not dead yet. Don't talk about him like he's already in the ground.
I meant no offense, but he was shot 3 times. Surely it's pretty unlikely that he'll recover.
Doc Yantis says he might pull through.
Well, I certainly hope so. The way I hear it, the only reason Kane came to town was to look for the doc because his partner had been shot. What happened with Bramlett anyway?
Dead. We buried him before we came into town.
Ah, it's a damn shame. Sounds like Dugan's bunch pretty much made a clean sweep of them.
It was Skeet Harlan who shot Chris. And nobody seems quite sure who the bushwhackers were that killed Will.
Everybody knows that Harlan and Marshall Keever really work for Dugan and the other big ranchers. Do any of their cowhands ever get arrested when they come into town and go on a bender? Of course not. Keever and Harlan don't want to rock the boat. They know who has the most money and power in these parts.
I'm not sure about that. Marshal Keever's always seemed reasonably honest to me.
Well, the man's dumb as a goat. and Harlan's just a snake-blooded killer.
Well, I can't argue with that part. I always shiver a little whenever Skeet Harlan looks at me.
It's just not right the way Dugan and the others try to run roughshod over you fellas.
If that's the way you feel, McAvey, why do you let him drink in here?
I'm just a businessman, boys. I can't afford to play favorites, no matter what my personal feelings may be. That's why I don't want any trouble in here, understand?
Beaumont looked at the door, too, and knew what had prompted McAvey's words. The door opened, and Earl Dugan stalked into the palace, followed by Frank Morgan and Ed McDonald. Dugan headed straight for the bar. McDonald did, too, so Frank followed them, even though he had spotted Tyler Beaumont sitting at a table with Al Rawlings, Callie Stratton, and three other men. Frank didn't do more than glance in their direction as he joined Dugan and McDonald at the bar.
Whiskey.
The apron hurried to fill the order. Without asking, he put glasses in front of Frank and McDonald as well. The group at the table looked like they were having a council of war. A man in a suit stood beside the table. Frank didn't know him, but from the looks of him, he was a businessman of some sort, maybe the owner of the saloon.
Hello, Earl.
McAvey?
I was just telling Rawlings and his bunch that I don't want any trouble in here. I hope I don't have to tell you the same thing. You should already know.
Yeah. It ain't your fight. Doesn't it get a mite uncomfortable straddling that fence all the time, McAvey?
I just want peace in the county, Earl. If I can't have that, I'll settle for having it in here.
We ain't looking for trouble.
I know it, of course. Who's this new fella?
Frank Morgan. Frank, this is Ace McAvey.
Morgan. I know the name. You were in here last night. Rusty told me about what happened.
McAvey didn't offer to shake hands, and neither did Frank.
Sorry about the hole in your back wall. I thought fixing it might be a little easier than mopping up a lot of blood from the floor.
You're probably right at that. But you may regret not killing Al Rawlings. He's been making quite a few threatening comments concerning you, Mr. Morgan.
I never worry over much about what somebody says.
Just thought you should know. Better keep an eye on your back.
I always do.
Well, gentlemen, I have work to do in the office, if you'll excuse me.
McAvey's leaving left the two factions alone with only the bartender, and he looked more than a little nervous about being in the same room with them. Frank sipped his whiskey and tried to think of some way he could get a few minutes alone with Beaumont. He hoped that a quick conversation would clear up a lot of things. The door opened, and half a dozen more men entered the room. They glared toward the bar where Dugan, Frank, and McDonald were standing, and went straight to the table where Beaumont and the others sat. That was enough to tell Frank that the newcomers belonged to the same loose alliance of small ranchers and farmers.
We might ought to move on, boss. There's a dozen of those boys now, and they don't look happy.
I never ran from sodbusters and piss ants, and I'll be damned if I'm gonna start now.
Hey, Dugan! Were you talking about me, old man?
That depends, Anderson. Are you a sodbuster?
You know I ain't.
Then you must be a pissant. Because I sure as hell was talking about you and your friends.
That's far enough, mister.
Who's this Dugan? Your new bodyguard?
You better be careful, friend. That's Frank Morgan.
Morgan the gunfighter?
Anderson hesitated, but he was too angry and too proud to back down.
I don't care. I aim to have a talk with Dugan. He can listen to me like a man or I'll beat some attention into him.
Anderson, you don't have a thing to say that would interest me the least bit. Better go back over yonder with your friends if you know what's good for you.
That's mighty big talk for a man hiding behind a hired gun.
Morgan, step aside. I'll handle this.
Mr. Dugan, I'm not sure that...
You're right for me, dammit! When I give you an order, I expect you to follow it!
Better do as he says, Morgan. The boss can handle himself. You and me better keep an eye on those others, though, to make sure they don't mix in where they ain't wanted.
For a moment, Frank didn't move. Then he stepped aside. Dugan was considerably older than Anderson, but he was still spry enough to fight his own fights, as long as the odds were even. Frank intended to make sure they stayed that way.
Nelson, don't be an idiot.
You need to take down your fences, old man. You agree to do that, and maybe I won't beat the hell out of you.
The fences stay up, and I'll shoot the first man I see cutting one of them.
Like you did Will Bramlett?
Yeah, what about me?
My man didn't have anything to do with Bramlett getting shot. You and your bunch are just too damn stupid to realize that, though.
A good man is dead because of you, Dugan, and another may die. It's time somebody taught you a lesson. and I'm just the man to hand you your needins.
You plan to talk me to death, Anderson?
Anderson was bigger and heavier, but the force of the blow rocked him back anyway. Dugan went after him, trying to follow up on his momentary advantage. Anderson caught himself, though, and threw both arms around Dugan in a bear hug. Frank glanced at Beaumont and saw the worry on the young ranger's face. It must go against the grain for Beaumont to just stand by and watch like this. Dugan brought his knee up quickly into Anderson's groin in an attempt to break the bear hug that was choking off his air. Dugan kneed him again. And this time, Anderson's bear hug slipped. Dugan managed to jerk his arms free. He smashed his open hands against Anderson's ears. Anderson let go of him entirely then.
Come on, piss ant! Is it all you got?
Frank could tell that Anderson was confused now, reeling in pain from his smashed privates and the blows to his ears. The jabs that Dugan landed just staggered him that much more. Dugan threw a haymaker that should have ended the fight. However, Dugan's momentum made him lose his balance and stumble forward. Anderson lifted Dugan into the air and slammed him down on one of the nearby tables. The legs of the table snapped and splintered, and man and table collapsed into a heap on the floor. It had happened too quickly for anyone to stop it, even Frank Morgan.
Damn it! You've killed him!
McDonald started toward Anderson. He launched into a flying tackle that caught Anderson around the hips. Both men crashed to the ground. McDonald landed on top and started smashing blows to Anderson's head.
You bastard!
Wounded arm and all, Al Rawlings lunged forward with a curse and tackled McDonald. They tumbled over and over, slugging at each other.
I'll kill you!
That's enough!
Morgan couldn't stand by and let McDonald take a beating, so he sprang forward to block the path of two men who wanted to get in on the fight. Then suddenly, Tyler Beaumont came barreling between the two men who were about to throw punches at Frank. He shouldered them aside, his compact, muscular form knocking them out of his way. Frank lowered his guard for a second, thinking that the odds had just gotten a little better.
Let me have him!
That's when Tyler Beaumont cocked an arm back and hit Frank Morgan square in the face, knocking him against the bar behind him.
You've got it coming, mister!
Morgan wasn't sure what the hell was going on here. Was Beaumont attacking him in order to solidify his position with the smaller ranchers? Or was Beaumont remembering what had happened to Victoria on their wedding day? Either way, Frank wasn't going to just stand there and let Beaumont wail on him. He snapped a stinging left jab into Beaumont's face that bloodied the ranger's nose. He hooked a right to Beaumont's belly. The blow seemed to have no effect on Beaumont. Standing toe to toe, they began to slug it out, trading punches, absorbing all the punishment the other had to give, and dishing out tremendous punishment of their own. Frank wasn't aware of anything else going on around him. All he saw was Beaumont's twisted, blood-streaked face. All he heard were their grunts of effort and the soggy thuds of fists striking flesh and bone. Beaumont's punches slammed into his midsection. They crashed into his jaw and rocked his head from side to side. Pain washed over him, filling his senses. But he gave as good as he got, and as his arms tired until they felt like lead and he could barely lift them, he sensed that Beaumont was just as exhausted and worn down.
You bastard. You bastard.
Beaumont managed to lift his right arm one final time and clenching his swollen, bloody hand, he threw a last punch. At the same time, Frank summoned up the last of his strength and struck out a final time as well. Aiming a shaky punch at Beaumont's battered face, both men missed by a mile. Frank struggled to lift his hands and got them against Beaumont's shoulders. Hey, Beaumont collapsed into a chair, his chest heaving. Everyone in the saloon was looking at him and Beaumont, even Earl Dugan, who had recovered from the stunning impact of being thrown down on the table and was now sitting up amidst the debris.
Well, who's going to pay for the damages?
Deputy Skeet Harlan stood beside him, his hand hovered over the butt of his Colt, ready to hook and draw. More than that, Harlan was ready to kill. Frank could read that in his eyes.
I'll pay for whatever's busted up. And well worth it to get in a few good licks like that. Somebody help me up, damn it. There you are, McElvey. Does that cover it?
Sure, Earl. In fact, it's a little too generous.
Keep the extra. It's the last dinero you'll get from me. You straddled the fence long enough.
Yeah. Better make up your mind which side you're on, McElvey. Because it's damn sure a war now. Let's get out of here.
You go ahead, Al. Ty needs to have the doctor look him over before he leaves.
I'm fine.
Don't argue with me. I'm taking you over to Doc Yantis' office, and that's that. You're coming too, Morgan.
I don't need a doctor. I've been in fights before.
You're coming, or you and Beaumont will both have to fight me. And the shape you're both in, I think I can whip you.
Go ahead, Frank. We'll wait here for you.
Frank could see that it wasn't going to do any good to argue with Callie Stratton. Once her mind was made up, changing it would be nigh on to impossible.
All right. As long as Ty here doesn't want to fight anymore.
I'm all tussled out, Morgan. I'll call a truce if you will.
Sure.
Come on, then. Al, I'll see you later at the ranch.
You sure about this, Callie?
Have you ever known me not to be sure? There's nothing else we can do here in town. Chris Kane is in the hands of Doc Yantis and the Lord. We'll just have to wait and see what happens.
We'll wait for you at the livery instead of here, Morgan. I don't want to stay in this dump anymore.
McElvey just shook his head regretfully, as if he wished it had never come to this. Frank wasn't convinced, though. He remembered a fleeting look of satisfaction on the man's face just as the brawl broke out.
Let's go. I hope Doc's got plenty of sticking plaster. You two just about pounded each other into raw meat.
Well, when I heard there was a big ruckus in the palace, I figured I'd be getting some business soon. What'd you boys do, light into each other with 2x4s?
They did it with their fists.
I'll be surprised if they didn't bust every bone in their hands.
Frank had already thought of that. It generally wasn't a good idea for a gunfighter to indulge in fistfights. He had already flexed his right hand enough to know that there were no broken bones in it, however. That was lucky. He wasn't sure about the left.
Just in case you two are still holding a grudge against each other, you'd better forget about carrying on your battle up here. I'll chloroform the both of you if I have to before I treat you.
And I'll help you, Doc.
Don't worry, the fight's over. Isn't that right, Ty? That's your name, isn't it?
Oh, stop it. There's no point in pretending you two don't know each other. What I want to know is where from. Well, spit it out.
What makes you think I know this gunslinger? I never saw him before today.
Now that's just a bald-faced lie. I saw the look that passed between you two when Morgan came into the palace. And I saw the way you lit into him, Ty. That was a personal fight. Nobody goes after a stranger that way. Actually, more than anything else, it reminded me of the way brothers sometimes fight when there's something really hurtful between them.
We're not brothers.
Morgan didn't see any point in continuing to deny the relationship between him and Beaumont, not as convinced as Callie was.
But we do know each other. We used to ride together.
Beaumont's eyes flicked worriedly to Frank. He thought Frank might say too much and ruin his undercover activities.
We haven't seen each other for a long time, though.
What's the grudge Ty's holding against you?
What do you think? It was all over a woman.
It was a long time ago. I thought I was over it.
Didn't look like it to me.
Yeah. I'm willing to put it behind me, though.
If you two lovebirds are thinking about shaking hands, I'd be careful. I haven't checked those hands for broken bones yet. Now, one of you climb up on my examining table, and the other would sit down over there in that chair and wait your turn.
Frank motioned for Beaumont to go first. He sat down in a straight-backed chair against the wall while Beaumont climbed onto the examining table.
Be gentle, Doc. These here boys are the sensitive type.
So I see, Callie, so I see.
Doc Yantis worked quickly and efficiently, cleaning the scrapes and cuts on Beaumont's face, swabbing them with antiseptic, and covering the worst of them with sticking plaster.
Ow! Take it easy, Doc.
My mother wanted me to be a lawyer.
Doc Yantis checked for broken bones in the hands and prodded Beaumont's ribs to make sure none of them were cracked.
I must look like a wild Indian the way you painted that stuff all over my face, Doc.
Nobody's going to mistake you for a Comanche, young man. Now hop down from the table. Your turn, Morgan.
Frank underwent the same treatment, and when Doc was through...
Both of you are very lucky. You might have been laid up for a week the way you thrashed each other.
I'm glad it wasn't worse than it was. Is there a place around here we can get a drink? I'd rather not go back to the palace right now.
You mean you want to have a drink with me?
Why not? We called a truce, haven't we?
I don't know if that's such a good idea. The two of you sitting down to have a drink together.
We'll be fine. We used to be partners, remember? There won't be any trouble. Will there, Ty?
Not a bit. You've got my word on that, Callie.
All right, then. Don't forget, though, Morgan, your friends are waiting for you at the livery stable.
They can wait a few minutes longer. Or they can head back to the Slash D if they want to. I know how to get there.
Maybe I should go with you.
We're all right, really. You can head back to your brother's ranch if you want.
All right. But I don't want to hear anything later about the two of you shooting each other.
Don't worry about that. I'm not about to draw on the famous Frank Morgan. We'll go over to Pomp Arnold's place. It's not as big as the palace, and it won't be very busy at this time of day.
Sounds good to me. How much do we owe you, Doc?
Let's see. 4 bits apiece for the office visit, plus some plaster and antiseptic. Call it $1 each.
I got it, Ty.
I don't need you to pay my doctor bills.
You can get them next time.
Not gonna be next time.
Well, I'll leave you two now, but behave yourselves.
Yes, ma'am.
The two men started walking toward Pomp Arnold's saloon, which was right on the square downtown.
What the hell are you doing here, Frank?
Let's wait until we get that drink. We got a lot to talk about, you and I.
There were a few drinkers in Arnold's saloon, but Frank and Beaumont were able to get a table in a rear corner where no one was around. As they talked, they nursed the mugs of beer they had brought over from the bar.
So, Frank, what are you doing here?
Luke Perkins wrote to me and told me you'd been sent down here to do a job.
Frank didn't mention the Texas Rangers by name, just in case anyone was trying to eavesdrop, even though he didn't think that was the case.
I came to see if I could help.
Let me get this straight. You rode all the way down here from wherever you were just to lend me a hand?
Look, Tyler, after Dixie died, I might have given up if it hadn't been for you. You helped me get through those bad times. You know that as well as I do. I couldn't get you through your bad times, not under the circumstances. But maybe I can do something for you now.
For a while there, I hated you.
I know.
Victoria tried to tell me it wasn't your fault. She doesn't hate you.
Frank closed his eyes for a second in relief. What Beaumont had just told him meant a great deal to him.
I figured I'd get over it in time. But every time I looked at her, I knew she'd be stuck in that chair for the rest of her life, just like she was locked up in prison. I hated you all over again for your part in what happened. I told myself that Ferguson was really to blame, him and that crazy kid with him. But then I think that if you hadn't been there, none of it would have happened.
That's a fair statement.
Victoria told me that if a man was trying to climb a mountain and fell off and died, it wasn't the mountain's fault. And that made sense. I could wrap my mind around that idea. But it didn't make the feelings go away.
It didn't make things any easier.
That usually takes time.
Yeah, I know. And I've got to admit, when I first saw you walk into McElvey's, the first thing I thought, other than being surprised, was that I was glad to see you. And I started remembering what happened to Victoria, and how mad I was at you. And it sort of all came back and just swelled up inside me until I thought I was gonna bust.
Frank touched one of the bruises on his jaw and smiled.
Busted out all right.
Yeah. I went loco, no doubt about that. But I'm not sorry. I think I needed to get it all out like that.
You don't need to apologize to me. And I won't insult you by saying we're all square now. I know that a few punches can't make up for what happened.
But it's a start. And now that I've calmed down, well, damn it, I'm glad to see you, Frank. I really am.
Maybe we better talk about what's going on around here.
All hell's about to break loose. That's what's going on. And the bad part is, I'm not sure which side is in the right. Dugan and the other big ranchers have the law behind them, but what they're doing with those fences, well, it just doesn't seem fair.
Same thought occurred to me.
But you're working for Dugan.
That's just how things happen to work out. I came to Brown County looking for you, remember? The way it seems to me, we're in good shape because between us, we're in both camps. If we pool our knowledge, we'll know what both sides are planning.
And maybe we can keep them from killing each other.
My thought exactly.
Rawlins and some of the others think they should be cutting more fences.
And Dugan has threatened to kill anybody he catches doing that. I figure he'll have his men start patrolling the fence lines even more than they already are. The next dark night, there could be a lot of trouble.
I'll try to talk some sense into Rawlins and his bunch. I already suggested they might be able to work out some sort of deal with the big ranchers.
I don't imagine that went over too well.
Not hardly. None of them have the money to make any kind of financial arrangement. And hotheads like Rawlins would rather fight than negotiate their way out of trouble anyway.
Sometimes a fella has to fight. Sometimes if you just sit around and talk, trouble just gets worse. And even more folks die than would have if you'd taken action. But some people just can't seem to understand that.
I'm not saying I don't agree with you, Frank. But my job is to stop trouble, not start it.
I know. And I'll help you any way I can.
Try to convince Dugan that shooting isn't the answer. That'll be hard to do with an old-timer like him who's always had to fight just to get by. But I'm hoping that if everybody'll just calm down, the worst of the trouble will blow over.
Frank had his doubts about that. Trouble hardly ever went away on its own.
What do you know about McElvey?
Ace McElvey? I know he owns the Palace Saloon. That's about all.
He's not on either side in the fight?
Hell no. He goes out of his way to stay neutral. It doesn't seem to be working, though. You heard Dugan. That's one thing that he and Rawlins can agree on, that McElvey's gonna have to choose sides. That'll be true of everybody in Brownwood if this goes on.
And both sides say folks are either with him or against him.
Yeah. Why do you ask about McElvey?
Because when that ruckus broke out in his place, for a second he looked pleased about it, even though some of his furniture was about to get busted up.
Now that doesn't make any sense. Why would McElvey want the two sides to fight when he's been trying so hard to stay out of it?
Has he really? Both sides drink in the palace on a regular basis, from what I'm told. Who'd be in a better position to sort of stir the pot every now and then than McElvey? All it would take is an innocent seeming prod here and there, and all the while he's pretending to want peace.
That just doesn't make sense. You're basing your whole idea on one quick glance, Frank? And that doesn't have to mean anything. There's no reason for McElvey to want to stir up trouble.
You're right. It doesn't make sense. Guess I was just grasping at straws.
But despite what he told the young ranger, he wasn't going to forget about Ace McElvey. Frank was still convinced the saloon keeper warranted keeping an eye on.
What about Chris Kane? You worked with him. Is he just a hothead like Rawlins?
Pretty much. He's really not a bad sort, though, when he doesn't lose his temper. He didn't come to town to make trouble and swap lead with Skeet Harlan. He just wanted to fetch the doc to help Will Bramlett. Of course, it was too late for that, but still, Chris had to try.
Harlan's a snake.
Damn right. I wouldn't be surprised if he's wanted somewhere under another name. I never saw anybody with eyes like that.
I have. John Wesley Hardin. Always ready to kill. It doesn't need much of an excuse.
If Kane dies, Rawlins and his crowd are liable to go on the rampage, trying to settle the score for him.
And if he lives, Dugan will press to have him put on trial. You ever heard the old saying about being between a rock and a hard place?
Sure. In fact, I'd say that's where Chris Kane is right now.
Tyler, I'd say that's pretty much where we all are.
They parted company after agreeing on a spot where they could rendezvous from time to time, an old cave on Blanket Creek where an Indian camp had once been located. It was on land belonging to a rancher named Binion, who had so far stayed out of the dispute over barbed wire fences. They would meet there every third night, if possible, to swap information about what the two sides were planning to do next. Frank followed the road southwest out of town toward the Slash D. Most of the countryside was low rolling hills, but some shallow rocky bluffs reared up here and there. Frank was passing one of them when he saw a sudden glint of light from a patch of brush on top of the bluff.
Gun.
Without him even thinking about it, instinct made Frank kick his feet free from the stirrups and throw himself to the left out of the saddle. As he was falling, a bullet whined through the space he had occupied only a second earlier. Frank landed with practiced ease, rolling over to break the force of his fall. He let his own momentum pull himself back up on his feet. Another bullet kicked up dust only inches from his feet as he dived into a little gully beside the trail. He bellied down as much as possible as more slugs chewed up the rim of the gully. His Winchester was still in the saddle boot on Stormy, and the Appaloosa had taken off down the road when the shooting started. Frank could have called him back. The horse would come to his whistle. But that would just put Stormy back in the line of fire, and Frank didn't want to do that.
Just stay where you are, Frank. He can't hit you, and this peacemaker won't reach him. Be patient.
The gunfire gradually died away. The rifleman could be reloading, Frank told himself.
Sounds like a Winchester. Probably holds 15 rounds.
Frank waited and listened to the silence, knowing that the rifleman could be trying to draw him out. After a few minutes, he heard hoofbeats in the distance. Either the bushwhacker was leaving, or someone else was coming along the trail. When the hoofbeats receded, Frank decided that it had been the bushwhacker taking off. The man must have realized that his bullets couldn't reach Frank in the gully. Just as a precaution, Frank crawled 100 yards or so before standing up. Nobody took a shot at him. The top of the bluff seemed deserted.
Good boy. You got out of the line of fire just like you were supposed to.
As long as a range war loomed on the horizon in Brown County, both of them were going to find themselves smack dab in the line of fire. Ace McElvey was in his office that night when a soft knock sounded on the door that led to the alley behind the palace. He knew the sound of that knock, so he got up from behind the desk and shot the bolt on the door into the main room of the saloon before he answered the summons. He didn't want to be interrupted while he was talking to his visitor.
Well, I expected to hear from you before now.
That idiot Kiever put me to work as soon as I got back to town. I didn't get a chance to get away until now.
Morgan must not be dead or else I'd have heard about it by now.
That bastard's got a sixth sense or something. He went diving out of the saddle just as I let fly at him. I emptied this damn Winchester but never hit him.
You sure?
Oh, positive. I rode off a ways and then got on top of a hill and took a look back through a pair of field glasses. I saw him right off. Didn't seem any worse for wear.
Damn, why didn't you make another try for him?
I could have. I got to thinking about it, though. I know you thought we ought to get Morgan out the way, but I ain't sure but what it's better the way it turned out.
How do you figure that?
Morgan rides for the Slash D. Who's he going to blame for trying to bushwhack him? Rawlins or some of that bunch, more than likely, right? If he rode out into the ranch and told Dugan about it, that's going to make Dugan more convinced than ever the only way to deal with the little ranchers is by squashing them.
Yes, maybe.
Look, I don't like having a gunslinger like Morgan take a hand in the game either. A man with speed like he's got's too much of a wild card. But if it ever comes down to the nub, he's only one man. He can't stand up to Colburn's whole bunch.
Well, that's true. And Flint is pretty fast with a gun.
Ah, Colburn's no match for me, and neither is Frank Morgan. I'm faster than either of them. And you'd do well to remember that, McElvey.
Are you threatening me, Skeet?
No. Just reminding you that we're partners. Equal partners. I've let you handle most of the planning because you're in a better position to see everything. But you're not running the whole show, McElvey.
No, of course not. And I know how fast with a gun you are. I've seen that speed demonstrated before, remember?
Just don't forget. Well, what do you reckon we ought to do now?
Every pot has to simmer a little. Tensions are high right now. Let's leave them that way for a little while. There's a good chance either Dugan or Rawlings will do something stupid and set off more trouble on their own. If they don't, we'll give them a prod. And there's the matter of Chris Kane, too. Whether he lives or dies, he could set off a nice little explosion.
Yeah, he's still alive this evening. I checked at the jail on the way over here. Doc Yantis was there, and he said Kane seems to be a mite stronger.
Good. Let him recover if that's what fate has in store for him. As soon as he's back on his feet, we'll push for a trial. That can't help but fan the flames.
All right. Let me know if you come up with anything else you need me to do.
Of course.
What a fool, McElvey thought. Harlan liked to believe that he was an equal partner in this setup, but it was obvious he didn't have the mental capacity for that. He was a fast gun and a reliable killer, that was all. Even after boasting about him and McElvey being partners, he'd had to turn right around and ask for instructions about what to do next.
Idiot.
He would keep using Skeet Harlan for now. But when this was all over, well, Deputy Harlan might just find himself the victim of a fatal accident. For the next week, an uneasy truce held over Brown County. No more fences were cut. No line riders for the big spreads were ambushed. The whole county seemed to be holding its breath. And in the Brown County jail, Chris Kane finally woke up. He didn't know where he was or how much time had passed. All he remembered was falling in the street with the thunder of Skeet Harlan's gun echoing in his ears.
Water.
He was aware of only two things now. That he hurt like hell and that his mouth was as dry as cotton.
Hey.
No one responded. Kane tried to force his eyes open, but was too weak.
Help!
He smelled wood smoke, probably from a stove somewhere in the building. The air was chilly, but not too cold. He felt rough wool against him. A blanket? So he was lying on a bunk somewhere. In the cabin on Blanket Creek?
Will?
No, Will had been shot. Those memories came flooding back in on Kane's brain. He shuddered as even that slight movement made pain shoot through his body. This time the whisper was a little stronger, but there was still no answer. Kane forced himself to breathe regularly as if he were still unconscious. As surprised as he was to find himself still alive, he was starting to get a bad feeling about the place he was in now. That feeling was confirmed when the footsteps stopped and then metal clanged against metal. The door of a jail cell opening, he thought. He was locked up.
I don't know if this is a good idea. You come in here like this every day, Miss Annie.
Somebody has to look after him.
Well, I'll be right down the hall. You holler if you need anything.
The heavy footsteps went away. Lighter ones approached Kane. He heard a scraping sound. A stool being drawn up closer to the bunk where he lay, maybe.
Poor baby. Poor, poor baby.
Kane opened his eyes and looked up at her.
Oh!
Miss Annie, you say something?
Oh, no, I'm fine.
Annie?
Yes, Chris.
How long?
You mean how long have you been here?
Yes.
A week. It's been a week since Skeet shot you.
How bad?
You've got 3 bullet holes in you. Nobody thought you were going to live, even when Doc Yannis said you might. Nobody really believed him.
My partner, Will Bramlett.
I'm sorry, Chris. He's dead.
Kane closed his eyes. Even though he had expected that answer, it still hurt to know that his friend was gone. They had made a lot of big plans, he and Will, but not a damned one of them had come to pass.
I'm so glad you're awake. I didn't think I'd ever get to talk to you again. You just rest now, Chris, and get better. I'll come every day and take care of you.
Well now, what's this?
Oh!
Hey, deputy! This here prisoner's awake.
Kane could see Skeet Harlan standing in the open door of the cell. He had come up without either of them noticing him, moving as quiet as a snake.
Just because you're in this big old county jail instead of my little town lockup don't mean I just can't pop in and visit any time I want, Kane.
Son of a gun, you're right, Skeet. I'll go tell the sheriff. Probably want Doc Yannis to come over and take a look at him.
Yes, get the doctor.
You better come out of there, Miss Annie. Now that Kane's awake, I gotta lock this door again.
Why? Can't you see he's in no condition to go anywhere? You can't be worried that he's going to escape.
Rules is rules. Step on out of there now.
I'll be back. I'll see to it that you're treated right, Chris.
I never expected you to live, Kane. Don't really matter, though. You know what's gonna happen to you now, don't you? You go ahead. Recover from those holes I put in you. As soon as you're able, you're going to stand trial for fence cutting and for attempting to kill an officer of the law, namely me. You're already a jailbird, Kane, and you go right back to prison as soon as the jury finds you guilty. And they will find you guilty. You know that, don't you?
I reckon.
Yeah, right back to prison, if you live that long. Some folks in these parts don't like the way you fence cutters defy the law. They might just decide to make an example of you.
Harlan grasped the bars and put his ugly, grinning face against them.
You might just get strung up, Kane. What do you think about that? Dancing your life out the end of a rope. It's a mighty pretty picture, ain't it?
No one on the Slash D had forgotten about the trouble with the smaller ranchers. Earl Dugan had ordered his foreman, Ed McDonald, to set up regular patrols on all the ranch's fences. Slash D punchers rode the fence lines at least twice a day, looking for any signs that the barbed wire had been tampered with. Frank Morgan took his turn on these patrols. He had said that he signed on with Dugan in order to be a regular hand, so he couldn't refuse to do his part in the work. Since the night of violence that had claimed Will Bramlett's life and left Chris Kane shot up, Frank had met twice with Tyler Beaumont at the old Indian cave on Blanket Creek. Neither of them had had anything to report. Things were quiet. But neither Frank nor Beaumont expected them to stay that way for much longer.
Mr. Dugan!
What is it, Pitch?
Chris Kane woke up yesterday. Doc Yannis says he's going to live. No doubt about it now.
They still got him locked up, don't they?
Yeah. From the talk I heard in Higginbotham's Hardware, the grand jury is going to indict Kane. And the district attorney plans to put him on trial as soon as he's well enough.
On what charges?
Fence cutting for one, I hope.
Well, boss, I don't know if you remember or not, but Kane never got around to actually cutting the fence that night.
Doesn't matter. He had wire cutters on him, didn't he?
He did.
That's a crime right there. And I'm sure Kane cut other fences when he didn't get caught at it.
That was a pretty big assumption to make, Frank thought, but he didn't say anything. He knew he would be wasting his breath if he tried to change Dugan's mind.
And Kane drew on Skeet Harlan. That's a crime, too.
Not to mention being a damn stupid thing to do.
Now Kane's going back to prison where he belongs. Good riddance.
He made a pretty good hand when he worked here.
And he should have stayed here instead of getting too big for his britches and going off with Bramlett to start his own ranch.
Man's got a right to have some ambition, doesn't he?
Not when his ambition is to crowd onto my range.
Frank could have pointed out that the spread started by Kane and Bramlett had been purchased by them legally. But again, it would have been a waste of breath.
Let's get back to work.
We got a lot to do yet before the roundup's over. And when it is, we'll have cows to push over to Zephyr.
The group dispersed as men went back to their work. As they did, Frank wondered if Beaumont knew yet that his friend Chris Kane had regained consciousness. Beaumont had returned to the ranch on Blanket Creek established by Kane and Will Bramlett. Al Rawlings and the other small ranchers had been in agreement that Beaumont would try to look after the stock by himself, but if he wound up needing any help, Rawlings and the others would be glad to provide it. They had to stick together, Rawlings said.
Don't worry, bossy. I'll get your baby out of the mud. Oh, gotcha. Easy now, baby. Your mama's out here waiting on you. Come on, come on. That's it.
Concentrating on freeing the calf from the mud, Beaumont didn't even hear the man riding up behind him until the gent was right there on the creek bank beside him.
Howdy.
Afternoon.
Looks like you got a calf bogged down.
Yeah, but he'll get loose here in a minute.
Now there he goes.
Go get him cleaned up, bossy. And keep him out of trouble. Something I can do for you?
I'm looking for Al Rawlings, Spread.
Oh, it's about 4 miles from here. Follow the creek for a ways and then cut west. You'll probably run into some fences, though. I'd advise you to go around them. It'll be out of your way, but safer.
Fences, eh? Never cared for them myself.
Maybe not, but the ranchers who put them up don't take kindly to having them cut.
I never worry over much about what a man will think of me. Especially some fat, pompous cattle baron. My name's Coburn.
Call me Ty.
What you're saying is that Ty ain't your real name?
That's pretty much my business.
It sure is. No offense meant.
None taken. Why are you looking for Rawlings?
That's pretty much my business.
Al and his sister are friends of mine. I don't want to see any trouble come calling on them.
Don't worry. I heard that Rawlings and the rest of the little ranchers around here have been having problems. The big ranchers are trying to stampede them.
You could say that.
I thought I'd offer to give them a hand. I hate to see a bunch of damn rich men trying to lord it over the little fellas.
You mean to volunteer your services or sell them?
Well, nobody's ever called me charitable. I don't mind giving folks a break, though, when I think they're in the right. And it sure as hell not right what the big cattlemen have been doing around here.
You've heard all about it, have you?
Word gets around, especially in my line of work.
I'll tell you the truth, Mr. Coburn. You can make a lot more money by hiring out to Earl Dugan and his friend.
Tyler had a reason for pointing Coburn in that direction. It was Beaumont's hope that if the gunfighter went to work for Dugan, Frank Morgan could keep an eye on him.
Like I said, I like to choose the side I work for in any range war. Maybe I should start wondering which side you're on, my young friend.
I'm with Rawlings and the others. In fact, just to prove it, I'll take you to the Rawlings Ranch right now.
That's mighty kind of you. I'll take you up on that offer.
Beaumont heeled his horse into motion and rode toward the cabin. Coburn fell in alongside him. As they came to the cabin a few minutes later, Beaumont saw a pair of riders drawing to a halt there.
Looks like you've got some more visitors. You're a popular fella.
Looks like I won't have to take you to see Rawlings after all. That's him right there, along with his sister.
Oh, I've heard she's a real hellion.
Miss Callie's got red hair and a temper to go with it, but she's a good woman.
Afternoon, Ty. Who's this?
Says his name's Coburn. He was looking for you, Al.
Is that so? I'm Al Rawlings. What can I do for you?
I'm hoping I can do something for you, friend. I've heard that you're having trouble with the big ranchers hereabouts. I'd like to throw in with you, if you'll have me.
You don't look much like a rancher.
No, ma'am, I'm not. But I'm sort of a specialist in handling trouble, if you know what I mean.
You're a hired gun.
That's right. I never believed in sugarcoating things.
Why do you want to throw in with us? You can make a lot more money by hiring out to Dugan.
That's what our young friend here told me. I told him I preferred to pick my own side in any fight.
You told him that, Ty?
So did you. It's pretty darn obvious, ain't it?
He's got you there, Al.
What did you say your name was?
Coburn. Flint Coburn.
I reckon I've heard of you. You were mixed up in some bad ruckuses up in Wyoming and Montana.
It says something for me that I'm still alive then, doesn't it?
I suppose so. I'd like to talk to you about this some more, Coburn, as well as bringing in some friends of mine. Might be we could get together and make it worth your while to stay around Brown County for a while.
Al, I don't know if that's such a good idea.
Right now, though, I gotta talk to Ty here. There's news from town.
News? About Chris?
That's right. He woke up yesterday, but we just heard about it today.
Oh, that's good news, then. He must be gonna recover.
Yeah, it looks like it, but I don't know how good the news is.
But if he's gonna be all right...
The law plans to put him on trial if it gets that far. But there's already talk around town that it may not.
May not come to trial, you mean?
Yeah, because some folks are talking about lynching him instead.
Skeet Harlan was at Pop Arnold's saloon when Marshal Keever found him.
Come on back to the office, Skeet. Trouble's brewing.
Harlan didn't like being talked to that way, but he was willing to put up with it for a while longer, at least until he saw whether or not McAlee's plan was going to come together and result in the big payoff that the saloon keeper insisted it would.
What's up, Marshal?
I'm hearing rumors that some of the cattlemen plan to bust Chris Kane out of the county jail and string him up.
That's Wilmont's lookout, ain't it?
He's liable to call on us for help. We need to be ready.
You heard anything about what Rawlings plans to do?
What do you mean by that?
Well, it seems to me that if Dugan's bunch wants to lynch Kane, then Rawlings and his friends might want to bust him out of jail before that can happen.
Good Lord, you're right. They're liable to be coming at us from both directions at once.
After going to the office and getting shotguns from the rack and plenty of shells, they headed for the county jail. One of Wilmot's deputies met them on the porch in front of Sheriff Wilmot's office.
You look like you're loaded for bear, Marshal. What's wrong?
What's wrong? Haven't you heard, man? The big ranchers are going to try to lynch Kane, and Rawlings and his friends plan to break him out of jail and rescue him.
Harlan managed to look worried and resolute when he really wanted to grin in satisfaction. Keever was as easy to manipulate as a little kid.
Well, I hadn't heard nothing about that. Well, maybe you better come in, Marshal, and talk to the sheriff.
Sheriff Wilmot looked a bit dubious, as Keever explained, but when the marshal was through, Wilmot nodded.
I reckon you've got your ear closer to the ground than I do, Sean. I'll call in the rest of my deputies right now. There won't be any prisoners busted out of this jail, by God.
Skeet and I will stay here and give you a hand.
I'm much obliged for that. Edna, this here's Sheriff Wilmot. I need you to ring up all of my deputies and tell them to strap on their guns and get down here to the jail as soon as they can.
Skeet Harlan couldn't be more pleased with the way things were going. Before this day was over, the two sides in the conflict would hate each other more than ever before. Brownwood was soon buzzing with rumors, artfully spread by men who worked for Ace McAlvey. No one noticed how the rumors originated at the Palace Saloon, just as rings rippled outward from a stone tossed into a pond.
No, thanks, Annie. I'm really done.
Nonsense. Just a few more bites, Chris.
You better listen to her, son. She seems determined to fatten you up, and you need to keep your strength up.
How do I look, Doc?
You'll live, son, but you won't be getting up and dancing a jig anytime soon.
That comment brought back memories of what Skeet Harlan had said about dancing at the end of a rope.
What's going on out there?
Never you mind about that. You just go ahead and eat. You heard what the doc said about keeping your strength up.
You listen to her, boy. I'll check back on you later.
You better look and see what that's about.
Annie had to open the glass more, grasp the bars, and pull herself up on her toes in order to see out.
There's a bunch of men down the street. They seem upset about something. Oh my God, one of them's waving a noose around.
Kane closed his eyes and felt a cold emptiness inside. He didn't think he was the only prisoner in the Brown County Jail, but he was likely the only one anybody cared enough about to want to lynch.